Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening, and as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Right, hello, welcome back to another episode. World Cross has literally just finished, so Matt and I thought we'd jump on now, give you a bit of a rundown on that. And then obviously, as you can see from the title of the episode, Callie Thackeray on this week. So we'll get into her episode later on. But Matt, mate, you've done your park run this morning, so maybe some of those people listening last week have motivated you to crack on a bit. I actually went for a 4-miler as well, so maybe we're both getting back towards it. But let's get into World Cross, mate, because I think that's enough about us for this week. But let's get into World Cross, because we were just saying off air that I think, yeah, some of that, the racing in that senior men's is pretty good at the top end, but the event itself, like, lack of crowd, bit of a random course. What's going on, mate?
The course was just... It was boring, wasn't it? I feel like the World Cross just pre-COVID and turned a real leaf. You know, when we had it in Aarhus in Denmark, it was, you know, they were bringing new ideas. They were really trying to kind of push it and make it something. And then COVID, obviously, the World Cross got delayed for X amount of years. And then obviously we had it in Australia last year. And it was, and that, to be fair, I still think was quite a success. But I think, again, like, just the event being absent for an extended period of time, it's not a regular of people's calendars. And I do think, like, ever since it's gone to 2 years, it's always hasn't been amazing. Just because of the fact that, yeah, people just don't get into the swing of doing it each year. Eurocross, people get excited about every year. They aim for it. But World Cross again, and it's always, the selection policy is always different. The trial races are always different. This is just from a British perspective, but I think all countries have this problem. And this is why we saw the likes of Italy, Germany, Belgium. Like, these are big, like, running nations on the European scene. Switzerland. I mean, Norway just had Grovdal, and how good are Norway right now? Like, they've got so much strength and depth. And just so many nationalities that didn't send anyone, let alone a team. I think we were just talking about the mixed relay as well. Like, huge, huge result for GB. Like, we should probably start there, because a bronze at the world championships is huge. And I think that was something we highlighted last week when we were sort of looking at the event in the preview thing, and mate, there's good prize money for these athletes as well. They go there and get the job done. I think, you know, it's £12,000 split between four of them, so that's a nice payday. So there was a good result for them as well, and I think they actually all ran very well. And they just kind of worked their way up. Tonkin led them off, and then Millard had a decent leg. And the gaps were small enough that, you know, people like Fogg, they could really work through late on. And Morley on the last leg, to be fair, she's become a bit of a short course specialist. But we were looking at the event and we were going, you know, they've introduced this event now for a number of years, or a number of World Crosses, and even on the Eurocross. And to have 13 teams, it's just a bit Mickey Mouse. And, you know, no disrespect to a couple of the teams at the back, but Fiji, I mean, where are they getting their funding from? Because they had people in every race, long courses, you know, mixed relay. So fair play. But
maybe they're paying their own way. That's the thing. We don't know the ins and outs, because some countries are. Obviously, GB aren't paying their own way, but I guess if they paid their own way, you could have full teams. So who knows if that will be something that comes in the future.
We pretty much had full teams. I think I just think as well, like, just a lot of European nations aren't getting behind it, are they? And I think it does take it away. But then again, look, let's talk about the races, because when you talk about European nations getting behind it, how can they, when Kenyan women, for example, 1-5, they, you know, the 10K world record holder Ngetich, who ran 28:47 in Valencia, she's finishing 4th, 5th. I just need to double check those results, but, you know, she's not even, you know, Beatrice Chevet was just, they were sensational. The women in that team, they had a couple of sub 29 minute 10K runners on that women's side, and they just eased away from everybody else. And it's just like, you honestly, you don't stand a chance. And, you know, Paula and Tim are there joking on comms.
Yeah, you say that, but for me, like, I'm like, well, why'd you turn up to a world champs on the track then? over 10K or 5K, for example. Like if they're not coming to these events because they don't stand a chance against some of these best athletes, why are you bothering turning up to the Olympics over 10K? Do you think you've got a chance there? Like for me, if people want to compete at that level, like the best in the world are showing kind of from these nations. Like you had in the men's race as well, you had Kiplimo, you had Aregawi, you had Cheptegei. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for our best athletes. And if you want to compete with them on the track, you've got to go and do something on the cross for me.
But these are where the standards have damaged the sport, because in order to earn a living in this sport, you have to go to world champs on the track. That's all anyone cares about. And the reason, and the Olympic Games and stuff,
Or race a load of major marathons.
or race a load of major marathons. And so, and the World Cross, I bet that won't be in anyone's contract. I
No.
highly doubt if that's even like. There's even a bonus for finishing in X place at the World Cross. Like, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant from a kind of financial point of view, even a credential point of view. You know,
Well,
Abby
for
Johnson,
example, like UK Sport, for
increase.
example, that aren't interested in funding teams to go to these events. And that's why, compared to like the Olympics or the Worlds, where lottery funding comes in, British Athletics have to pay for these events out of their own, whatever budget that is. Whereas for the Olympics, Worlds, they get lottery funding. So the governing bodies themselves, not the governing body, I guess the people who are funding the governing bodies aren't interested either.
Well, and this is it, because I mean, imagine if your contract did involve making a world cross team and you were from Italy, and Italy say, we're not taking anyone. You're stuffed, aren't you? So, but it's a real shame, because someone like Donnelly finishing 20th today
Unreal. It's class run.
in that field, that is unreal, because you're right. You know, when you get to the Olympic Games, you've only got three Kenyans instead of six. You've only got three Ethiopians. So she's. That is equivalent to almost a top 10 in the world, over a
100%.
10K cross country, which is just insane. And she
That's
should
the
be
best
very,
run of
very
her
happy with her
career. Yeah,
performance.
for sure. And for me, that is like, that's brilliant for her, because I think if she can now get herself in the right 10K race, which she should be able to as a 20th place in the World Cross, but I'm not sure it does translate to that. But for these kind of race organizers, but if you can get in the right race, I think you then go and you can run a super time, because there's no way you're coming 20th in that race and you've not got a good 10K in you.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I agree with that, and I think the World Cross will always be the hardest race in the world to win. I don't think there is a harder race to win than a senior women's or a senior men's World Cross. And it's just because the level of the athletes at the front, but then throw in the fact that the Africans are they come into a league of their own on the cross, and I think that just stems from the type of training they do. We know they do loads of fartleks, the terrain they run over, like they're not frightened of hills, they're not frightened of rocky roads. You know, here in the UK, we're seeking out bloody every bit of good tarmac to just to do a 20-minute tempo as smooth as possible. And they don't do that in Kenya, and that is why they are so dominant on the cross. And so not only are they, you know, we, a few people can get close, Europeans, Americans can get close over 10K on a track, over 5K on a track, but they'll never compete with them on the cross until they start taking it more seriously. And I've got no doubts they could. So I think that's where our frustration comes from a little bit is, yeah, that really good Europeans and Americans, they don't take it seriously. And I don't know why, because like you said, yeah, it's always been the foundations for the Africans to come to a world cross, perform there, and then go on to a great track season. But this is where the standards and having to nail times and this and that's where it's kind of taken away all these top Europeans, because they're preparing for a one-off 10K, one-off 5K that they're going to hit over this next, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. But should we break the races down a little bit? I mean, we mentioned, to be fair, mate, maybe we'll give the juniors some airtime, because that again, I think it's great that the juniors can go. Ins Fitzgerald and Jess Bailey, 2 seconds apart. Ines coming 17th as well, so a good taste of like fierce international competition for her. It's a big step up from a Eurocross.
Oh, that's it, mate. Like the junior races have always been high caliber as well. Like it's like you say, it's probably a harder standard than you're gonna get at like a world juniors on the track, for example. So like getting yourself in the mix with some of those athletes Because normally the ones that come through from some of kind of these classic distance running nations who come through on a world cross as an 18, 19 year old, they're the ones that then a couple of years later they're smashing it on a track on the world stage. So they're 2 years away, these athletes that are winning these kind of under 20 world cross, they're 2 years away from being world class as a senior on a track normally. So yeah, great experience for them, and like you say, like, just good to see that we're still sending athletes to these, and then hopefully that's something that continues over the next few years. Because whilst the event maybe does appear to be dying in some ways, like, I think just the lack of spectators was really disappointing. Like, you see more at British Athletics Cross Challenge, for example. Like, Liverpool has a far better atmosphere than what it looked like on the stream. But as long as we keep supporting it, and hopefully the other countries start doing it as well, like there's other European countries.
We can only hope. I mean, I don't know if it's been released where it is in 2 years' time either. So might need to double check that one, but I'm not sure if it's even been confirmed. I think, yeah, the course and stuff and the atmosphere, I guess it's a little bit harsh to judge because, it wasn't always going to be there. It was going to be in Croatia. And the reason they, pulled the can on Croatia, pulled the plug on Croatia was because they weren't making enough progress. And I was thinking, how much progress do you need to be making to host a World Cross? Like, no, seriously, if Parley Hill hosted the World Cross, I mean, look, they'll go set the course up maybe 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before. And like, what progress needs to be done? But this, and I guess, you got to put some athletes in hotels, but you were talking there was 245 athletes at this World Cross. It's not many. And a few, and obviously the coaching staff. So maybe you talk about 500 people you got to put in some hotels, and maybe you got to put some buses on. It's not even becoming a massive event to organize. I don't know if they're just
No.
really overcomplicating it, mate, but Jesus Christ. We have probably more numbers at a league match, a league cross country. You got
Oh,
500 blokes
easily.
in the senior men's ranks, and people organize it on a Saturday morning. So I didn't really know why this it was the event was pulled from Croatia anyway, and in Serbia, and people would say kind of, Serbia last minute job and stuff. I'm just thinking.
Yeah. I'm sure some race organizers listening will have something to say about that. I'm sure there is some things we've forgotten about, but yeah, who knows, mate? Who knows with that sort of
They
thing?
might do, but anyway, sports news and Chris Barnes at Podium Festival put on Podium Festival, 48 hours before, 36 hours before, so, and it was Berkeley's
I guess
final
the
event.
progress in the planning though, So who knows? Maybe they just weren't doing anything. But like you said, surely World Athletics are doing a lot of that for them in terms of like sorting out entries and whatnot. But yeah, I think like you mentioned, obviously in that women's race, five Kenyans, it's unbelievable, isn't it? And I think Tim Hutchins mentioned on the comms that it's probably one of the most, if not the most, dominant that like one nation has in an event. Like, when do you ever see five people from the same nation getting a top five in like any sport?
Very, very, very rarely. And I just think they've just got some ridiculous class at the moment, haven't they? And the way they're running, I think there were some awesome shots, and I just thought, imagine if, that was like four Brits, or just to have five of them at one point were just abreast, and they were just running in sync, and it was literally like it was a training group. And look, yeah, we won't see that often. So it was, from that angle, it was quite mesmerizing. And Chibet come away with the win. And I think, again, they were saying on comm, 24 years of age, and she's a three times world cross champion now, mate. And something else we got to note is the winning time. If it is a legit 10K, let's say this is marked out perfectly, 21, no, 31:05, the winning time.
Yeah, negotiating those hay bales as well, so
Hay bales on grass, turns. It wasn't hilly, it was pan flat, but even so, I'm like, God, the standard for Worlds is, or Olympics, is 30:40, isn't it? Yeah, running 31:05, it's just, but then they can run sub 29 minutes for 10K, so
I think you just got to think the confidence you'd have, isn't it? Like if you were say that fifth Kenyan, like at any point in the race, sorry, looking around you, like you're not going to drop off, are you? You're looking around, it's like your whole teammate. You're like, well, we're all going here, so none of you are going to drop off. So that must have been just immense. And like you said, to be fair, like that is one thing I thought it was pretty good. Like you mentioned, some of the shots, I did think the kind of camera angles were pretty good, and you got quite a good feel for the races, like a mixture of like the close-ups and some of the overhead shots. So in terms of the coverage, I thought that was pretty
Good
good, to be
coverage. Yeah, it
honest.
was good. It was good coverage. No faults there. And then we'll just mention Grovdal, 14th. That's pretty strong run. Again, though, yeah, five Kenyans in front, four Ethiopians, few Ugandans, and that Kazakhstan athlete who may as well have been a Kenyan. And then Wene Kalate as well. She really got after it, and she was in seventh, eighth for a long time. And then just faded. She looked like she was almost going to collapse at the finish. And I think we get that, don't we, at these world crosses. We can't forget the heat as well. 27 degrees, it was roasting. So we often find that, like I said, we saw people collapse in Australia last year. We saw, Cheptegei
It's
collapsing.
always hot, isn't it? Like
Is
even
world crosses are always hot. Yeah, they're
you don't think of Serbia like, oh yeah, that's gonna be a hot one.
Yeah. I
And
swear in
then
Denmark, it was pretty. I remember Denmark being sunny on the day. I don't know what the temperatures were like, but obviously Australia, I think, was hot last year, and then today it was hot, and before that it was in Kampala, wasn't it, Uganda? So it's been some hot world
Bring him
crosses.
to Cardiff, then it definitely won't be hot. So
Saying that, mate, it's
Cardiff Cross Challenge, of
beautiful,
course.
beautiful day today. We've got sunshine for
It
once.
is, it is.
I think as well, like, it would be nice to see a more of a testing course. Just something. It wasn't a
And
testing.
I'm just not sure about all this sort of kind of fake stuff.
Yeah.
I guess I'm like, well, if it is literally gonna be a pound flat field without it, then fair enough. Like you had the muddy section, you had some like almost like a sand pit over some of the roads, you had like the fake hill and the
Hey.
hay bales that they looked like carnage, to be honest, because I expected everyone to weave in and out of them. But then when you've got people to your left and right
I
hurdling
do.
them, you
Yeah,
can't
yeah.
weave in and out. So
I
everyone
know.
had to hurdle them. So yeah, that looked quite interesting. But I do think like, if you can just find a course that has some natural turns like around some trees, like we know what it's like. I think yeah, the best cross country courses are in the UK though, aren't they? Or even I'm not opposed to some of the American courses. I know some people don't like the golf courses, but you look at some of the courses and whilst they are like really nice mown grass, some of them are challenging courses in terms of some of the climbs.
Oh, this is it. That reminds me, the World Cross is in Tallahassee, Florida,
Oh yeah. And
2026,
that
mate.
is an unreal course as
Yeah,
well. So
that's where it is. It has been confirmed. It's been confirmed for ages. So yeah, and that is a good course.
yeah.
Obviously, it will be firm though. Like, it will be very fast under feet. But it was testing. Remember, if I'm not sure if people remember, but go back and watch the NCAAs there. That was the time Kupetier, that famous video of Kupetier
Yeah.
collapsing from the finish. Did Charles Hicks win that day, or maybe
Yeah,
Conor
Hicks
Mance
won.
might?
Yeah.
I think Conor Mance might have kicked him, actually.
Who was it?
Yeah,
Yes, you're right. Yeah, Conor Mance won.
I
You're
think
right.
Mance kicked him. Yeah.
It was Mance, Hicks, and was it Wildschut on home soil?
Yeah, Wild Shoot on home soil got third. Yeah.
Were the
Yeah.
top three?
Yeah, that was
And yeah, Cooper went with
watching.
him. And then, yeah, bad.
So.
That was a class racer, so go back and watch that. Yeah, if you haven't, and if you want to get a taste of what's to come for World Cross, because that is a phenomenal course. But yeah, let's get into the senior men's then. And like I said earlier, I think just the caliber of athletes that you get at the top of this race, I just don't see why you can't have more people from European countries doing it. But again, like you say, Matt, maybe it is just a case that these qualifying times are so hard to hit that they can't risk coming to a World Cross. But I don't think it's going to damage Kiplimo's chance in the summer by doing World Cross, So
Well, and the problem is as well, it's really, and we'll get onto it now, it's really hard to quantify people's performances because, Will Barnico got 27th today. And that's, and he's someone who he was, he ran really well at the Eurocross. And we know how talented he is. And he was someone who he's been wanting to do World Cross the whole time. He's committed to it. And it's really hard for him. Probably and his coach Tim as well, like, to quantify that performance, because you've got guys who are just exceptional talents, 2 minutes up the road. So, where do you kind of go, oh, okay, is it 90 seconds behind Kip Limo? Is it Is it a minute behind Kip Limo and it's a great run, or do you look at the kind of people you're around?
That's what I think. Like for me, like you got to look at the guys you've beat. Like he's beat Pat Tiernan,
Yeah, you
and
beat Pat Tiernan, a 207, is it 207 marathoner? Yeah, and people like Fernando Caro, European steeplechase medalist, multiple times, and he's like an eight sub 8:10 steeplechaser, So he's beating some good names. He's only just a tiny bit behind an Ethiopian. Maybe we'll see what the Ethiopians run. I'll do a bit of research while we carry on talking. But
yeah, I think great run from him. Obviously, like yeah, him and Donnelly, I think definitely should be proud of their performances, for sure. Like obviously, yeah, Donnelly 20th is phenomenal. But then 27th is a pretty damn strong run from Barnico too, considering he's still, how old is he now? 22.
That is his first. Well, yeah, I think that's his. Yeah, obviously he was under 23s at Eurocross. Yeah, so
Maybe not even that. Maybe he's
he's
21.
21. That's disgusting. God, yeah, 21. I'm just looking at that Ethiopian, by the way. I can confirm that Ethiopian Barnico was a second behind. How about this? Has run a 60 flat half marathon. So he's in good company, sitting 27th in the world. And like you said, yeah, he's beaten the 207 marathon running in Pat Tiernan. Like all those guys ahead of him are serious athletes. So we
And
can
Pat
safely
Tiernan is an
say.
NCAA cross champ back in the day when he's in college as well. He's not even like it's not even like
Yep.
he's a road specialist. The
Yep.
guy beat Chez on the cross
Yep.
when he's in college. So yeah, that company, you've got to take that run. I'm near the top end then. Obviously Rono made it interesting, didn't he? He looked like a good quality athlete when he was taken out, didn't he?
He did. And I'm getting sidetracked here, mate, but 27:08, Anthony Rotich ran, and he was only two places ahead of Barnico. So, and he ran that just at that 10K a couple of weeks ago. So he's in 27, sub 27, 10 shape, and Barnico is a couple of seconds behind him over a 10K cross. That is the caliber, the company Barnico's in. So, but yeah, mate, let's go back to the front of the field, you were saying.
Yeah, I was just saying about Rono, mate, making the race interesting for everyone, kind of making a bit of a breakaway until what, lap and a half to go.
Yeah, fair play as well. God, I just think we used to see how Farah just like toy with the field on the 10Ks on the track. Like this is what like Kip Limo's doing. He's just how confident must you be? Like he's letting, yeah, Rona did get a bit of a gap. Like none of them were fazed. Like, and when you looked at the speed that Kip Limo just threw down towards on that last lap, it's just like. Breaks up the field with one hard move. This wasn't like surges. This wasn't like waiting for a testing part of the course. He just threw it down and was just like, okay, see ya. And he just looked so relaxed.
Yeah, I think it's just a case of supreme fitness and supreme confidence. Like, you want it before, you know you can do it again, and you're in great shape. Like, one question I want to ask is, what's happened to Joshua Cheptegei? Because we've seen some compared to the Cheptegei of what was it, 3 years ago when he was kind of unbeatable over any distance. We're starting to see like quite a few almost chinks in his armor. And have we seen the best of Cheptegei, or is he going to kind of come back out and ever get back to those sorts of feats? I'm not saying he's obviously still world class. Like he's obviously one of the best in the world, but it's quite a few times now he's been kind of blown away.
Yeah, this is where as well though I feel like money talks for me. I mean he is still the 10K world champion from Budapest last year, so he is still on top of the world when it comes to the big stage, and I guess the races that he's really planning for and plotting and going for. So I don't think we need to worry too much. But this is like his marathon move in when he did Valencia and really blew up and stuff there, and like how hard he went out and stuff, like it's just a bit rogue. And this is where like I do think, he's 27. Like Farah would have never made those moves. Like Farah, I know he did start to step up to the marathon, but he did the half, didn't he? And then he did kind of one marathon and was just like, oh, I'm gonna put that on hold for for a number of years now until I sort of attack it again and take it seriously.
Yeah.
And
And
yeah,
also Farah didn't over egg it in his marathon debut.
no.
He just recognized to run like a good time.
Yeah.
But I think that's why Farah's career, like we could have a whole podcast talking about the greatest distance runner of all time. But like Farah's career in terms of 5 and 10K track running is unmatched. Like his record. We talk about purely record, it's unmatched.
Yeah, it is. So I wonder is,
It's,
I mean, yeah,
yeah.
Jeff's guy is 27. There might be a few chinks. But so far, I mean, over 10,000 meters. I mean, he lost the Olympics, it didn't he, to Barega, but you know, he's got what has he got? Two, he's won the worlds twice, three times, I think. Yeah, geez, 2019. So he's
Yeah,
still on
but
top of the world when it
he's let
comes to
like
10,000 meter running, mate.
Oh no, I just think almost have we seen the best of him like in those time trial races over 5 and 10K.
Well, yeah, I mean, wait, yeah,
I just
he's never gonna run his world records again. I actually think those world records, like, I don't know if
they
they're
are
gonna be
ridiculous,
touched for a
aren't they?
while.
Yeah.
That 10K, I'm just not sure that's getting touched.
Is that almost like the this is almost the issue with these perfect races though, because I don't know. If that's me, I'm like, well, I'm not my best, so why am I? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
people always talk about shape.
you
What
always
does Chester
question
guy talk
yourself.
about? Yeah, he's
That's what I
like,
mean.
what's his,
Like,
what's him not in
everyone's a
shape?
bit like that. Like, everyone is a bit like
Yeah,
that. Like,
yeah.
you liked. It's nice to know that you just run a PB, going into any sort of race.
Or near PB territory,
Yeah, and
like when your
like,
PB is 26:11.
he can't touch those. How is he going to touch those? So like, he just approaches championships. But I almost feel like that was again like Farah. Like he never really chased it. There was never really a
And that was the
problem.
nice thing, yeah. So he just knew he had to
Yeah.
be in the realms of, and I guess like Chepsky, as long as he's in 26:40 shape, like he knows he can probably go and win a major championships like over 10,000. Like that's probably all you I say, but that's probably the shape you need to be in, right? But his 12:35 might come under threat this summer. Let's see. I mean, Kiplimo now, Gowrie and Kjelcher and stuff, and Barega and
Yeah.
everywhere, they were going at it like crazy last year. That's the one which might be under threat, but. With the Olympics and stuff, will
Yeah.
they
I think
really?
it's easier to get enough guys going through like 3K fast enough for a
Yeah.
five. Whereas like the 10, you gotta go through 7K at least with like a few of you going for it. And that's just
26
not,
11 is
yeah.
just that. That's ridiculous. So yeah, but it was a great, I say a great men's race. It was a good men's race. You know, it was a little bit cagey at the start. It was a big group, and Kiplimo did what we kind of knew he would and expected him to do. And you were just kind of waiting, weren't we? Like all race when this guy was going to move to the front. So, but mate, let's shout out Callum Johnson as well. He got 44th in the end, just outside 30 minutes. So kind of put him sort of 20 seconds behind or 30 seconds behind Barnico, and then. We had Kingston in 68th, Scott Sterling 74th, and Tom Evans was somewhere in there as well, 49th. So just behind Callum Johnson. So pretty, you know, kind of decent, typical Brit showing at a World Cross. And I just love the fact that we've still got men who really, and that was what was apparent when we were speaking to Johnson, is I know he actually wasn't aiming for a World Cross, but he still really enjoys the cross. He values it and he knows, look, if I'm in good shape on that. I'm going to be in good shape on everything else.
Yeah.
So, and the same with the
I think
women.
so. There's no hiding on the crosses there. Everyone who's run a cross country race knows that. Like, you never, if you have a good cross race, you're never in bad nick. You can't blag it. So.
So let's. I mean, yeah, that was World Cross. It's come and gone. Let's move on to let's get Callie on and you know, talking about people who could have done it. Like people who are in good marathon shape. Like. They would have probably fared pretty well, you know, someone like Callie, decent half.
Yeah, for sure. And Callie, obviously, someone who loves racing, and we spoke to her a bit about that. So, yeah, we'll crack into the episode with Callie. Obviously, he's been pre-selected for the Olympics in a marathon this summer. So, have a listen to see what she says.
I Okay, first off, Callie, just welcome back to the podcast. All things have changed, I guess, since the last time you came on, but congrats on the Olympic selection, because I think that's the main one, isn't it?
Oh, thank you, guys. Yeah, a lot's changed, I guess, since the last time we spoke.
Yeah, for sure. How does it feel to be kind of one of those first few names on the team? Because the marathon's always first. So is it nice to know, like, quite far out it, that you go in and you can just prepare?
Yeah, it is a really nice feeling, like, to know in early as February, like, you know, it feels good, and it's good, like, in many, like, the logistics are just better, aren't they? You can plan, and my family can plan, and we can breathe, and we can, because we know now. And yeah, I think that was the main thing. It was like, I did want early selection, I was hoping for it, but I just didn't know how it was going to go. You just never know. So when I did get the call, I was like, oh, okay, this is great, but oh my god, it's happening, and I am going to the Olympics for the marathon. Like, still can't believe it, to be honest. If you told me that a year ago, I would not have believed you.
So did you celebrate? Did you celebrate at all? How did you take the news?
Yeah, we went out that night for a meal. It was the longest day. They made me wait. Like, I knew we were finding out that Monday, like, either way. Thank you. I knew we were finding out that Monday. And basically, it was like every hour. I thought, for sure, they'll tell me by like 3 p.m. So like, I went on my run like a bit later than normal. And on my run, I took my phone, and I was like, I kept getting random calls as well. And I was like, oh, this is them. And it wasn't. And I was like, oh no, this is just, I was just, and then when I got back, I was just pacing all day. I was like pacing up and down the room. It didn't help that all my family, what obviously my circle, what no, like that was a selection meeting day, are all messaging me, ringing me. And I'm like, I don't know yet, guys. Like, I don't know. And then at 6 p.m., I think it was like 6:30 p.m., I got the call. And straight away, thankfully, they were like, it's good news. And I was like, okay. But yeah, I went out that evening and just had, yeah, had a nice meal with my husband and coach. And yeah, it was nice. And then I celebrated the next day with family. And yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. How long did you have then till you're allowed to announce it? Because I know sometimes there's a bit of a lag, isn't there?
That was the other thing. So like, I'm not good at keeping secrets, and like, they were like, right, you can tell your close friends and your family, but like, it can't go anywhere else. And I was like, okay, like, this is gonna be weird, like, me knowing for like, I knew for 9 days until they finally announced it. So for 9 days I had to keep it like a secret, and I had people messaging me going, and then people were asking like, when's the Olympic selection? I thought it'd already been. And I was like, I mean, I just had to keep it on the down low. But yeah, no, it was a weird time.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. I can only imagine. So has life changed since? Interested to know, you know, have you had to do more media duties? Obviously, you know, you're back on the Sunny podcast, which is clearly huge, but jokes aside, yeah, has life changed at all?
Yes and no. I guess like the show just goes on, doesn't it? Same old, like, back into training, trying to not do anything too crazy at this point. But no, not really. Like, you know, like, yeah, it's a big thing. It's like, you are representing your country on the biggest stage, and it is massive. But yeah, life just goes on as normal. Like, I've still got to, you know, get to August, make sure I'm like fit and ready to go. And like, I've just got my head down now, to be honest, and just enjoying it for what it is, and just being able to breathe and know that I've got this selection now, and just fully focused on training, racing in between, and just figuring out that schedule, and making sure I'm doing all the right choices now in terms of like me being my best self on that day.
Yeah, let's get in some of those races now then, because you raced quite recently as well. Obviously 31:10, long overdue 10k BB, I think. In Trafford the other week. So the speed's looking good, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what I'm like though. I do love my speed stuff. I will never ever like close the doors on that. I do want to do a few 5Ks as well. Like, that's my baby. It's still my baby, even though, you know, I'm a marathon runner now, I guess. But I will always do the 5Ks, the 10Ks, half marathons and stuff in between. I just think they're good. Like, all of those distances complement each other. And I just like to keep sharp. And they always say as well with marathon training, don't they? And it was a fear of mine, I'll be honest. Like, as soon as you start marathon training, your speed goes. And it's not true. Like, I guess it depends on like what kind of, how you do that and what your training looks like to make the marathon work. But I'm not your typical like marathon runner in terms of training. Like, I'm still very much, I can like the jump is not massive between 5K training, and honestly, like 5K training and marathon training for me, like wasn't a massive difference, I'll be honest. It was just I'm lucky that my VO2 max is very high, and that's actually helped me in the longer distances.
Yeah, I remember when we spoke previously, and that was getting on for 2 years ago now. When you had your 5K breakthrough, you said I started training like a marathoner, and that led to my 5K breakthrough. So one of the questions I'm keen to know, Callie, is had you planned beyond that Olympic selection? Or was it kind of boom, you got selected and then you're like, crikey, we coaches need to sit down, we need to start mapping out the next 4 or 5 months.
What was that? Sorry, what has changed?
I was just saying, did you map out so you got selected for the Olympics, and had you already had in mind you were going to go and sort of planned out training, or were you waiting to be selected and then kind of planned out training after selection?
Yeah, I was actually going to do another marathon. Just because like I didn't know how it was going to go. I did hope that they would select me based on the time, if they were going to go off times. And current form, I thought I ticked all the boxes. And yeah, so I was hoping that I would get picked, and then I guess yeah, I would have had a backup. I would have just gone all in on the track. But yeah, so when I did get selected, now it's just yeah, just focusing fully on that. But I guess at the same time, like I say, I will still do some different races as well, just to keep my sharpness and my fitness.
You say you were going to do another marathon. Were you going to do London at all?
I was actually
Was that
going
on the
to do
cards?
no, because they don't like you to do London just because of like past history, I guess. Like I think a lot of people have done London, and then it just breaks into that perfect 20-week build, what they do like. And you know, like things can go wrong in a marathon, so they just don't love how near it is to it. So they did prefer me, I think, to do like another marathon, so something a little bit earlier. So I was going to do Seville. And I was like training for that, so I was in great marathon shape, ready to do it. But then it got nearer, and I was like, do you know what? Like, I had a good, decent half marathon, what I thought showed some form, and I was like, do I need to do one? Because like things, I was just scared of like if I do another marathon, like let's say I just get a really bad stitch or something goes wrong, and you just don't know. There's a few risks. Yeah, I would have loved more experience, don't get me wrong. I do think it's valuable, but I can also get a marathon stimulus elsewhere, without doing another marathon and having a few more risks, with the selection meeting being the day after Seville. So I just kind of banked on the fact that I hoped I'd done enough. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's a tough position to be in, I'm sure, because especially with the marathon, it's so easy to say on the track, look, I'll go and bang some races out. If it doesn't go well, then I can turn up next week, or you just put it down to a bad race. But marathon wise, you might have to wait another 6 months, for example.
It's so different, and obviously, you know how I am about 5Ks. I'm like, okay, if I have a bad one, I can do one a week later, and that's what I was doing for a while. I was doing 5K after 5K, like almost every week. Like, but it's different in the marathon. Yeah, it's I don't know. I did like, and they do say that in early selection, they say, look, like you can have early selection, but you can't do another marathon now if you're going to accept this. So I was like, oh, okay. I'll just,
Does
but
that
I'd
frust-
rather have early selection, I guess.
Of course, of course. Does that frustrate you? And you keep referring to they, I presume you're talking about British athletics. How have they impacted your training then? Are they actually a part of it then? Are they guiding you in some sense?
I guess they can't fully like they can't, you know, like you have your training, your race schedule, they can't really all they say is you can't do another marathon. They do say like be careful, make sure, you know, you're doing all the right things, and they will support you in that. And but like yeah, ultimately they can't fully stop you. But I guess they could deselect me if I did do another marathon, obviously. But so that's something I just had to make the decision on, and I was like, okay. But even though I've only done one marathon, I do feel fully confident in the distance, funnily enough. I think it's almost a good thing to be naive in the marathon, a little bit naive. Yeah.
And well, let's talk about that debut then, because talk about naivety. You smashed it out of the ballpark. Were you expecting such a big debut?
No. I mean, I knew I was fit because obviously I'd just done the world half like 2 weeks before. I was feeling good. a little bit of a foot thing actually in the half, so it stopped me because I was feeling absolutely amazing. Like that seventh felt like one of the easiest races ever. But then the last few miles, I did have a weird foot thing, so it kind of like stopped me from staying with the pack, which was frustrating because I honestly think I could have gone all in and tried to medal. But like, it is what it is. Like things happen. So I had, and then in the race, I was thinking, I just hope it's not a stress response or anything like that, because I had this weird thing going on. So then I had 4 days off actually, like basically sorting this foot thing. It wasn't anything sinister in the end. It was just, yeah, just a weird thing what happened in the race, and all was good, thankfully. But I think, and then I had like an easy week, and then a few, like one more confidence session to, you know, make sure I could do the marathon. Well, hoped that I could like get through a decent marathon. But because I'd done all the training had been done towards for that, and I think the half marathons I done had all helped, and yeah, I just think I backed myself in the training and the racing, and I was like, do you know what, like let's just do it, see what comes of it. Yeah, and I was thinking maybe 2:24 on a good day. So when I saw 2:22, like I was just shocked, and I was asking Nick, because my husband, he was pacing, he was pacing me in the race, and I was like, 18 miles in, I was like, okay, like we're at the business end of the race now. Like, so I asked him, because my watch wasn't, what, I had no idea what pace I was on for. So I asked him like the 18th mile, I was like, Nick, like what pace are we actually on for? And he was like, oh, and he was like trying to do the maths as well. And he was like, I think we're on for like 2:23 something. I went, what Charlotte ran again? And what's Rose ran? And he was like, it's like, well, Charlotte's ran like 2:23 low. And I was like, okay, we need to do that. Like, we need to do that. I was like, can I pick it up now? And he was like, I mean, he did. And he did subtly pick it up. And then when he dropped out, I had like 3 miles to go. And I've never sprinted so much in my life. I was like, because I knew I was like, would be on like maybe getting that 2:23. And then when I saw 2:22 low, I was just like, oh my God, I've done it. Yeah, sorry, I got the times mixed up with Rose and Charlotte. But yeah, I was just like, oh my God, I think I've done it. Like, I just did not expect it. Like, yeah, it was crazy. A lot of feelings that day.
Yeah, for sure. It was a phenomenal time, and I think a lot of people kind of woke up to that and were like, wow, what a debut. You chose quite a relatively low-key race, and it clearly paid off. Talk to us about that decision.
Yeah, I think it was just, that was just getting my feet wet in the distance. That was what it was always going to be about. And then Seville was always going to be like my main one. That was the plan anyway. So yeah, when I happened to like get it right on the day, I was just like, oh my God, like okay, now what? Like do we need to do this then? And that was the whole, but I was like, no, like I always thought to myself, like no, I do want to do it. Like it'd be another, like a different kind of race, like a big city event, and just kind of offer something different. But yeah, I don't know, like it just, luckily, like I am glad I did it the way I did. It's like, I know there's definitely was doubts in my head, because I'm like, oh, okay, like it would have meant more, it would have been a lot more to, I think, to look at. It would have been fancier and better if I'd have done it at Chicago or something like that. But it's okay, like I've got many years to do a good like world major and stuff, and I, at the end of the day, like I did everything I needed to do, and I got the job done to for my ultimate goal. So, yeah.
Exactly. And did you personally get any sort of criticism? Because I know when people saw the course, it was like a 4 mile loops course. How did you just kind of deal with, yeah, any criticism that was maybe
Yeah.
sent your way?
Yeah. I did have a, it was more like just like whispers in the background and stuff about the course, like people like saying, oh, it shouldn't be ratified or something. And I was like, well, I knew what went into that course, and I knew like two of the guys who do the like world majors, who measure the world majors and everything, I'd certified it twice, not once but twice. So I was like, I knew it was very thorough, I knew it was legit, and it was a world label like event in the end, and they got it all done. And I know the guy who actually directed it, and he's brilliant. And I knew like, I made sure of it. Like I was like, I don't want to run that, and then like if I do get a good time, or I don't want it to, you know, I want it to be legit. And he reassured me on that from the start. And yeah, and then afterwards they were like, oh well, you know, like I don't know, there's some, you're always going to get some haters, aren't you, with road running and courses and this and that, and like is it, you know, like I don't know, but it's fine. Like I know, my coaches know, and like all the people in my circle know like the course. And to be fair, it was a hard, it was hard. Like I think I don't actually run much faster in Chicago, I'll be honest. But like just because like the atmosphere in Chicago would have been insane, like on those streets, it would have been an incredible, like just completely different. Whereas this, it was just like running it. I mean, it suited me personally because that's like my training ground at home. Like it's just a classic 3 mile loop, like, and that's what like I do all my training, my sessions on. It's just a very simple, effective way of training, and that's what works for me. So it felt like I was just at home, like on my local lake, like doing these loops, and I just got in such a rhythm that nothing was just going to stop me that day. But I was just lucky that all the stars aligned, though. Like with, you know, like I just started so conservative and like was able to just have so much energy at the end, and everything just went right with fueling. And yeah, I just finished it and was like, oh wow, like I'm so lucky. Like everything went right. I had no stomach issues, like felt incredible and was able to really like bring it home at the end. So yeah.
Yeah, let's rewind and chat a bit about the build up itself then, because I think if I remember rightly, like in that summer, you kind of, I guess, is it fair to say you had a bit of a rough patch in terms of some of your 5K performances and that sort of stuff? Was that then what made you think actually now's the time to have a crack at this marathon?
Yeah, like last year was a weird one. Yeah, I think it was, I had an illness for a while, like what set me back in the winter. I think the winter training is like for me, like if I can get that right with no illnesses, no injuries, I think I can like have a really good season. But unfortunately, like my winter last year was just awful. Like I had bronchitis for like 3 months straight and I could not get rid of it. Like I was literally like coughing up my lungs like every day. And even just doing my normal runs was just like a no go. So I'd not actually sessioned for a while, and it came to like January, February, and I finally started to get my mojo back a little bit in training. And I was, you know, I do try and like race myself into fitness. I'll still get on the line, even if I know I'm not like fully fit. I'm not scared of getting on the line. I just think it is, it's still good. And it, so yeah, I was still racing and just finding it very hard to like get back to like what I was the year before. But no, that wasn't the reason why I changed. I guess I just did the marathon just to see. Like, I think for so long, people have like embedded it in me from a young age. Like, so many past coaches have been like, "You're a marathon runner. Like, look at your biomechanics. Look at your family history. Like, you're a marathon runner." I had a college coach tell me tell me that, and then a coach who I went with after college. He was like, "You're gonna do the marathon." He wanted me to do the marathon, and I was like. And he was like, "You're at the age, you need to do it now. The time's ticking in the 5K. If you want to be a good 5K runner, you need to be like." And I'm like, "I'm 24 years old at this point." I'm like, "No, I'm like, my dream was the 5K." And then that's what I saw. And like, I honestly believed I was going to make it in the 5K one day. And I put everything into that as well. And yeah, unfortunately, like, it didn't happen when, you know, at the time. But like, I still like. But like obviously with all of this in the background, I was like, maybe I'm a marathon runner then, and I'll just give it a go. So I did. I listened to people and I did try it, and yeah, okay, they were right. But I don't know. It's just funny. I enjoyed it way more than I thought. It's crazy. I genuinely did not know I would enjoy that as much as I did. It was probably the easiest race I've ever ran. Like it was just it's the weirdest thing. Like I just finished and I was like, oh my God, like that was actually like so nice. Like I just enjoyed every minute of that. And I was like, I didn't want it to end. And I was like, I finished. I was like, oh my, yeah, it's a, I don't know. I should have listened, but.
Well, you know, it sounds like you did it exactly at the right time. And I think with the Olympic selection, when it was, you know, timing just, it was just right, wasn't it? Like it was a
Yeah,
perfect time to get
for
it
once the timing was right.
in.
Yeah.
Exactly. But who was coaching you in that build up, and who's coaching you now? What sort of training were you doing? And I think, you know, you mentioned doing that half, what, 2 weeks before. That's quite unusual to do a half of that stature 2 weeks before a marathon. So yeah, who was kind of behind all these ideas?
Yeah, my now husband and co and he's now my coach as well. He's been coaching me for like nearly a year now, so it's been good. And he knows, like, he does know me better than anyone. He sees me every day. He knows when my emotional cups like fall and when it's not, and like all of the little things around it. So it really does like aid in like a good like relationship in terms of like, yeah, he just knows me better than anyone and knows when to rein me in, knows when to push me. And he's seen like all the types of training I've been doing for the last year, and he knows what like fully. And he does a lot of like coaching himself on the background, even though, and he's an elite runner, he understands it, so it just works. And I trust him more than anyone. So yeah, it's a really great relationship, and it's just worked for me. Yeah, and it helps that he's a marathon runner himself, and he gets it and gets what it takes.
And would you say you had a specialist marathon block for like 16, 20 weeks, or did you just kind of continue rolling along, attacking races, and then a few, you know, hard long runs here and there?
Yeah, no, if you looked at my training, I don't think you would say it was a marathon block at all. Like, I just think, I'm more quality though. Like, I'm more like, instead of quantity, I don't do like 100 plus mile weeks, rarely. Like, my mileage is like anywhere between 80. On a great week, it would be like 100. Like, I think once I've gone 107 one time. So like, I'm not your typical like high mileage person, but I do a lot of quality work. So like, I do a lot of fast sessions, and like, I hit into that, you know, like that 10K half marathon zone a lot. So when I went to do the marathon and I was doing 5:30s, I was like, this feels like a jog right now. Why are we jogging? Like, and Nick was like, Callie, you've got a long way to go. Like, you just gotta you've gotta pace yourself. Like, it will feel like a jog for you, but you've still got a long way to go. So yeah, it's just funny. Like, it just works, like, yeah, for me.
Yeah, clearly working in some of those results. Do you ever kind of take some training arguments back home with you, or is it all good?
No, we don't actually. We're like, I think I'm the one what would push things more, and he's like I'd be like, oh, I'm actually fine, like, can I not do another rep? Like, and he's like, no, Callie, it's not needed. Like, he's like, we don't need to prove anything in training right now. Like, yeah, he's very good at like, yeah, he can rein me back, and I do trust him. Luckily, no, like, we have like an easygoing relationship, and yeah, luckily it works for us. But I can see how it wouldn't for some people.
What a team. So, Callie, as we near the end of the podcast, whereabouts in the world are you? And what's your plans now between now and Paris?
Yeah, so I'm currently in Flagstaff, just on a brief training camp here, just while I was in racing out here anyway. So, yeah, have a few weeks here, go and pace the London Marathon, because I've done it every year for the last few years now, and it's just a good like running training stimulus for me as well. So yeah, I'll probably go out and try and do 18 miles of that, and then yeah, a few races here and there. You'll probably see me on the track still. I do want to get in some races on the track, because it helps me and I enjoy it, and I like to be competitive on the track as well. And I've got no pressure this year, so I can go and really enjoy it. So yeah, you might see me at Highgate, my first 10,000 meters on the track.
Epic.
Yeah, wow. I'm excited.
What happens if you pull one out of the bag at Highgate? Does that change anything?
Sifan Hassan, come Paris.
I know, right? I mean, I wouldn't say no to a cheeky double. Like, I mean, no, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I've got to do it first. I you know how much I love the 5K though, so I don't know. I don't know if I'll. 25 laps actually still scares me. 25 laps of the track. Yeah, I've done a marathon, but 25 laps on the track, I don't know what it is. It's just, yeah. But I don't know. We'll see. I'll just go and have fun with it and see where I go. And then, yeah, hopefully do like the odd 5K and see where that takes me. But I do feel like I'm in good fitness on the track as well right now. So, yeah.
Well, this is interesting because obviously you did New York weekend, and there was pretty much the same weekend as Sound Running, wasn't it? And the 10. So did you have that? What did you weigh up that decision, and what was the thinking behind New York, and how was your most recent run there?
Yeah. I did weigh up all these options, even the podium 5K. You know, I love those. I was like, oh, what do I do a podium 5K?
Chris Barnes is gutted.
Yeah. I would have loved to have tried to go for that win. That was a good race. That was a great one. But no, it was good. I knew I had to do New York for the marathon because it was like a hilly course, and it would be like, it's just good to get that like kind of feel for the hills. Oh, I'm
Right.
so gutted though. Like, I just got really ill, like a classic, like thing, you know, things can happen. And I just got really sick like 2 days before it. And I was like, oh my gosh. I started having this, like, you know, when you know you're about to get ill. And I was told, and my like husband, he was like, Callie, I think it's just the air con. He was trying to be positive. He was like, we've had the air con all day, like maybe it's that. And I was like, no, I'm telling you, I'm about to get a bad head cold. I can feel it. And yeah, it did, and came on bad. And then I did everything I could. So I was taking ginger shots, like chicken noodle soup. Like the night before, I had this like brothy type chickeny thing. And normally I would just have simple carbs. So obviously I didn't think anything of it because I got rid of the cold somehow. And the next morning I actually felt like normal. And I went to do my warm up and I was like, I actually feel good. Like, I think I could get away with this somehow. And then, oh my God, my stomach, like 3 miles in, it was just like, hello. Like, it was about to, like, oh, I don't even know what I was about to do. It was not fun. And I've never had that. I've normally got, I pride myself on having a strong stomach. So when that happened, I was like, oh, I know what people mean now when their stomach goes, it's not nice. But I actually felt like I was going to vomit. Like, I was like, oh no, this is not going to be pretty. The cameras are right here. Yeah. And it was just not fun. 9 miles of digging deep and trying to finish the race when I thought I was going to be sick. But yeah, unfortunately, these things happen. It was still good to, like, you know, do it. And I do definitely want to do that race again. So I think it would actually really suit me, that race. On a good day. But no, still glad I did it. And you don't know unless you do get there and try it. And yeah, that was the main reason behind doing New York though, just to get the experience on the roads with the hills, undulating course and stuff. But I'll get another experience, and hopefully, like, I'll get to do Europeans, and there's a half marathon this year, so hopefully, like, we'll get to have a double at a like good championship race in the
This is
half there.
all so yeah, it's all good points as well. I just wanted to ask actually, does your husband Nick, does he coach anyone else, or is it just you? Is it just like, you know, you two are a team, and like, who do you train with? Do you try and jump in with people?
Yeah, so he does coach. He coach, I think he's got like 20 odd athletes, but they're all online. So, but he's got like trail athletes. He's got like, yeah, he coaches quite a few marathoners. He's got a few good like girls who have run like 73 minutes and a half. So he does coach quite a few competitive runners. But no, I typically train on my own, and like Nick's on the bike with me a lot when he's not, like, because he's currently going through a bit of an injury himself at the minute. So he's been biking with me a little bit here and there with my sessions. And then when I'm in Flagstaff, I mean, you've always got people to train with, so that's nice. So I do like coming to Flagstaff and jumping in with a few people if it suits here and there. But I don't mind running solo. I don't I've done it for yeah I've done it for, like, in and out for many years. And whether it's when you I think when you're in good form, like if you're in that, you know, a good fitness phase, like and you feel good, like you'll get it done no matter what, whether you're with someone or that's the one good thing about it. But when you're not fit, that's when it's not fun doing solo sessions.
Yeah, I think we can all relate to that. But anyway, yeah, Tally, it's been great to chat to you today. Thanks for coming back on, and best of luck for the rest of the season and Paris, of course.
Oh, thank you guys. No, it was great chatting, great catching up again. Appreciate it.
Okay, great to have Callie back on the podcast with us just then. Obviously speaking about Paris, and it's exciting times, right, isn't it? I always think it's a bit of an interesting one when you've only run one marathon prior to the Olympic Games. So like, you're probably not looking to, I mean, she's probably not even looking to PB, is she? Just because it's a completely different circumstance. So it's almost going to be like a debut, because a championship marathon is very, very different, isn't it, mate?
It is. And look, we know the elevation is going to be crazy. And actually, I saw on social media this week, I think it's a 13% incline at 30,
For a K, yeah.
at the 30 kilometer mark for a kilometer. And just like, that is going to cause serious problems later on. And that is what's like, it's just going to be quite exciting, that how that marathon unfolds. Because it's not, you know, it's not just going to be a case of fastest person on the day, because you've got the heat to factor in, the climbs to factor in, and all that sort of thing. And feel like, you know, someone like Callie, he's just like, just, yeah, never afraid to race, always runs hard as she can, you know, and just a real gutsy runner. It might suit someone like her. But one thing, I mean, I guess I was getting a little bit frustrated with from just speaking to her is like the way that British athletics, like they, you know, they have told athletes what they can and can't do. And even an extension of that is the World Cross this weekend. Athletes who finished sixth and a first reserve, they were limiting people, or they were, yeah, I think Kingston as well. They were limiting people what leg they could run at road relays last weekend, at the Southern road relays and area road relays. And even if you were a reserve, they were saying no, you know, you can't do a long leg and stuff. And like, look, British athletics, fair play. Like, you know, obviously they know their stuff, and they might think they're looking out for their athletes. Well, they're not their athletes, because, you know, what do they actually do for them? Nothing. But just, you know, and Callie mentioned it quite a few times, the way that, you know, BA have limited her from doing certain stuff. And I was just like, you know what, if this person that you have rightfully selected wants to go do a marathon, wants to go do X, Y, and Z, let her do it.
I think you're right there, mate. And I think sometimes they think they know the athletes better than they know
They
themselves. And I'm
do.
just like, if you think that they're good enough to be in a team, like we said, these people deserve to be in the team. Like they've made the case, they've made the place. You got to let them get on with it. Like if they think, or their coach thinks, that they need to go and race whatever the week before, then that's what they should be doing.
They'd have a heart attack if Sifan Hassan rolled up on the British team. They don't know what to do. You know, this lady's running a marathon, you know, X amount of weeks from attacking a triple at the World Champs. Like, so, you know, if it's good enough for someone like her, like, I know, you know, British athletes might not be the same caliber, but it's irrelevant. Like, what gets them ticking, what gets them firing, what's good for them, just let them do whatever the hell they want to do. If they've ticked the boxes to get selected, I don't know why BA like have to feel like they have to like interfere and start like watching over them and stuff.
And let's just clarify that Callie was not complaining at all. This is us
Oh
sort of
no
kind of
no we're complaining.
interpreting what she was saying, and yeah, we're having a moan. So no one come at her, please. But
But the
what
thing
we were
is,
excited for though, mate, she's doing Highgate, and there is that possibility of
a
of an
double.
Olympic double if she could manage to make a team, which would be a fantastic story, and I'd love to see it.
Think she might. I think she's, I mean, with her track pedigree, I think she didn't beat him with a serious shot, like given her marathon and her strength. And I'm like, well, if she can get herself into sort of 14:50 shape, which is probably very doable, given her marathon strength, surely she can, you know, put a few 15:20s back to back. That's much easier said than done, obviously. But I'm like, you know, I think she could get that standard now, Highgate. And what was just exciting was she was just like, yeah, I'd happily do the double, like marathon and 10K, let's go. I think as well, it's we learned a thing or two just kind of the way she trains. And often you almost get two types of marathons, don't you? Those who just kind of rely on their credentials and their ability. And obviously they're still putting in serious numbers, serious volumes, because they're high class 5K, 10K runners, and you have to be putting in serious volumes if you're going to compete over that distance anyway. But they don't go crazy marathon specific. They just let themselves. I mean, when you're a high class 5K, 10K runner, you're going to go through the half fairly comfortable. Now, when she's run 67 or so, is it for the half? Or, you know, it's like you're going to, she's going to, you know, how good must she be feeling running 71, 72 minutes? And then you're just like, well, look, you know, there's going to be question marks over that last 10K, but if it's a good day, you feel properly, the shoes and stuff, oof, she's done it.
Well,
And
like you mentioned
that's,
Hassan earlier. Like
yeah.
Hassan's not someone who's like tearing up her training to go on marathons. He's just a super talented, and not just talented, hardworking and well-rounded athlete on the track. And I think it's something that, and you talk about the shoes, like obviously it's not all down to the shoes, but I think it's something that we used to see it with the half a bit. Like all the best 5K and 10K runners would have a good half in them because you just have to. You have to be a good half marathon runner to
You
be a
do.
world-class 5K or 10K runner. Now, with the addition of shoes and like just a bit more knowledge around some of the fueling and stuff, you automatically
You're a decent
are
marathoner.
like you should be a decent marathoner.
Yep.
Like it's like you're telling me, like so, well, like Mark Scott, we're gonna see it soon. Come London, like world class 5K and 10K runner. Like he's not been specific for the marathon for like years, but you can kind of bet that he's gonna be there or thereabouts because of that caliber on a track. When you're that fast, like you say, it's gonna feel good for a long time, but then yeah, like you say, it's that last 10K, isn't it?
Exactly. So no, it was good to catch up with her because it had been a while, and understand kind of her preparations and what she's been up to since. And obviously there's been some big changes. You know, she's coached by her husband now as well, which I thought was an interesting dynamic. So obviously doing a great job. And she's signed by Nike as well. So she's made some good moves in the sport. So yeah, keep an eye on her and we look forward to seeing her at Highgate. And one more thing that's probably worth mentioning, obviously National Road Relays next weekend, 12 stage. So yeah, we'll look forward to that. I think big teams are
You
probably
fancy him, Matt? You're not rocking
Hey
out.
Bracknell, dude, we didn't even turn the team out for the Suns. We
Well,
took
no one asked me, so
12 stage is difficult for our club. But mate, yeah, Leeds, Highgate could be the jewel, Bristol and West. I know they only got second at the Midlands, and one of the reasons was, you know, Jack Miller doing that, having to run that short leg, even though he's reserved for the World Cross. So, you know, it was impacting not just athletes but clubs as well. So but yeah, so that's to look forward to this weekend. I wonder if the athletes like Will Barnico and Jack Rowe and stuff Oldershot will manage to get them out so they can actually compete. But they seem a little way off it at the moment.
it'd be
Sorry,
good, wouldn't it?
Boucher.
What about Mark Scott? Mark Scott and Phil Sesman, they normally like a road relays run out, don't they?
Well, I don't know. I think Phil might be tempted to turn out for a road relays and get a leg down. I know he's going to do some. He's going to try and target the track as well. But then
I
another.
see, like, Phil's
Go on.
someone that you know he's going to be doing something of that like kind of similarity anyway on his Saturday. It's not like he's like just going to do it, so may as well, you know,
He's
and
gonna
he's someone to
do
come see
yeah.
us.
He'll do a 20K tempo that's better. You know that he'll average like quick fast. You know faster. He'll average 450 per mile. You know for a 20K tempo or something. So he could almost do a couple legs to be honest. But another thing that we should probably talk about is the Bannister Miles coming up. I definitely wanted to shout that out. I think it's gonna be a fantastic event. Festival of Miles has been going at Oxford for a couple of years now. The lads have brought it back. And obviously this year being 70 years since Bannister broke four on that track, it's gonna be a pretty big deal. So the elite fields are getting sourced together. So if you are interested in attacking a good track mile, early May, 6th of May, get entered and spread the word. It's gonna be good prize money. But also there's actually a road mile in the morning, community mile in the morning, starting at the town centre, and that'll finish at Iffley Road as well. Just pretty much a straight line road mile in Oxford. So if you fancy that. It's early season as well. Get your entries in. But the big thing, we'll have more on that over the next few weeks. But the big thing is the World Athletics wanting to trial a steeplechase mile. Now, apparently, they hooked a load of fans up. Don't quite know what I mean by that, but basically analyzed fan experience. And I think they sort of measured their heart rate to see if they were excited and stuff at the World Champs. And so they could see how fans respond to different events. And steeplechase was one of the worst ones, but I think that's kind of sometimes it's a bit unfair because it just depends. I thought steeplechase was good, but we're probably a bit biased. But I think it
Yeah, I
depends
think
on
we
the
are
race.
biased at a steeple, mate.
It depends on the race and it depends on the names and stuff in there as well. Like it's like I'm sure there's years where the 5K might have been, you know, a bit dull if it wasn't a race and stuff. Like for example, if you had a World Championships and there's people watching the 5,000 in Daegu when Mo Farah and that competed. But if you had that World Championships in Britain and analysed fans, they would have gone off the roof, you know, because the British fans obviously would have been a lot more excited. And I'm just like analysing a World Championships in Hungary, like it's a good international fan base, but are they, you know, are they really sort of like, so, you know, supporting it and diehards? I don't know. But anyway, so they're now thinking about, you know, cutting the steeplechase down from a 3,000 to a mile. So if you are listening, let us know your thoughts. I think it sounds exciting and it'll be a good trial event at Iffley. They're gonna trial at Iffley. So if you're a steeplechaser and you fancy a quick a quick one. You'll probably end up with a world record. You will. It's going to be a proper
Yeah.
mind effects of ending. You might even end up with some good world ranking points. Who knows? They might
Is your
not have done
brother
the
doing
math
it?
properly.
Is Zach doing it?
Well, this is the thing. It clashes with but this is the problem they're going to have is until they actually change it.
Yeah, what's the point? Yeah.
Athletes are trying to get steeplechase qualifications, and obviously, you're going to get in a fast 3K
Yeah.
steeple because
The
you're chasing.
2K, the 2K steeple is a great event, to be fair. So why wouldn't you just do a 2K? Because people are used to, like, that's been run a fair
I
few
think the
times.
2K slaps, yeah. The 2K is
Yeah.
because it is for it is like it's it is kind of for those 15 guys
Yeah.
because they've
We
only
did a
got to just
1K steeple down in Milton Keynes back in the day. Just at an open meet. Just put on a 1K steeple just for, it was for like the, I don't know, like the under 15s just transitioning. It was like, just come try our steeple, it's only a K.
But
Yeah.
one of another reason why they were like, oh, it would be great is because we can have someone break 4 minutes for the mile for the steeplechase. Obviously, that is
Yeah.
like in a few years'
Cool.
time, like that would be ridiculous. But I feel like these like having that sort of mentality is not good because you should be supporting head-to-head racing. Like, why are you supporting someone just going it? Because only one person can do that feat. And it's like anyone else who doesn't do it, you're like, ah, well. And then that's all
They're
people.
just trying to find the next Kipchoge, though, aren't they? Like,
Yeah,
I do
that's.
think that is the only thing that's really brought in new fans, I think, anyway. It's the only thing that's kind of
I don't
gone
even. I don't. Mate, I don't think it's
outside
brought
of
in. I
athletics.
don't think it's
I
brought
don't,
in
yeah,
fans in
maybe I've,
athletics.
maybe I've, maybe I've like not said that right. I think it's the only thing that's sort of been trending, if that
It's
makes sense.
raised the profile
Yeah.
of running, period. Like
Yeah.
that was a
Like
no joke.
Kipchoge's breaking two, and the super shoes
Yep.
kind of went viral outside of
But it
running
hasn't turned. It
circles.
hasn't. What it hasn't done is turn people's attention to, I would say, even the front of the marathons. You could ask anyone on the street who won London Marathon last year. Probably wouldn't be able to tell you who won Boston Marathon, these sorts of things. And also, it hasn't turned their attention to the track, I don't think.
No, no.
People still aren't paying attention. So it's done wonders for the shoe companies who are selling these shoes because it's grabbed in a load of, joggers. But it hasn't.
Yeah.
It,
I
yeah.
mean, we'll see sub four from a woman at some point, I'm sure. The way those times are getting down over 1500 meters, so.
Well, I've heard that is a yeah, that is a possibility as well. They wanna, I think Nike's next big thing will be getting Kipyegon or someone like that
Yeah.
to try and attack. We'll see at 4.7, I think, 4.5 maybe.
Yeah.
It's a bit
You've
too
got to
far
think, like,
away.
if someone like she can't, surely in the next 20 years
They can,
they're gonna be down
yeah.
to those sorts of times, you'd think.
But this is another thing. Like I'm just. Like I don't really like that mentality, like being like, oh, we need to go break X record, like because,
No, I agree, mate. It's
and also like people of the past,
Winning
like
races, yeah.
yeah, people of the past, like they never really did that. They just like were just good, and then they were like, right, okay, I'm close to a record, I'm gonna get after it my own
Yeah.
terms.
Well, I'd rather see a 325 1500 than a sub four steeple.
Steeple will be well. We don't know. We don't know what the mile steeple will throw up, but I think it will be quite special. So, I am looking forward to it. I do think I'm on the fence about it. I'm like, do you here go Wild Athletics again, wanting to change things. It's not the
They should do
events.
it indoors, is what they should do. And that's the indoor steeple, is a mile.
Yeah.
You just have hurdles on the straights. No water jump.
Yeah. Because it's yeah.
I think you can't just get rid of an event, can you?
I
But it
think what
can.
they, I think what one of their things is, it will be more exciting because it will be closer, right? Because it's less, more people can stay in the race late on.
Yeah,
But
but
this is what
honestly,
worries
you will
me
have
about.
some horrendous injuries.
Oh, I was thinking that, man. Imagine going into that water pit like at 60. Things they run close to the, like they run
Yeah, that's the thing.
60,
They
61s
close
now.
their second 1500 is rapid.
Yeah, it's like.
So, but I just, yeah, like you say that, but if it's more built up in the latter stages, like imagine, say you have like one of these like the equivalent of like a 3:45, 1500 in a mile, whatever that is. It tactical race, and they all go into the bell like eight abreast down a back straight.
Oh my god! Yeah. They need wide barriers.
Well, they need wider barriers as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I was gonna say they need to take out the whole track.
Otherwise,
I think so.
Because otherwise, you can't. You don't.
I think the barriers go to
outside
lane,
of barriers.
I think the barriers go lanes. Might be lane 3.5. It might do 3.5 lanes to barriers to cover.
Yeah, you need more than that if you're running a mile.
Comfortably, like, so yeah, let's see. Keep it, we'll keep our eyes posted, but and we'll keep you up to date with that. But yeah, if you get yourself down to Iffley, because you'll be able to watch it in the flesh, on the 6th of May.
Yeah.
So anyway, perfect, mate, pretty much it this week.
Yeah, definitely. So thanks for listening. And we'll catch you very soon.
Have 5 new messages. Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.